Hey again, Anchor. So today we're going to talk about Michel Foucault's Madness and Civilization. We read it in a graduate school program for social work, mental health, in a human behavior class. And it's a book that does a brief sort of types throughout history of how civilization handles madness. It's pretty accessible. And so, like I said, it goes through different sort of types throughout history of how civilization deals with madness. And he starts out with the Renaissance, and he goes into the apocalypse. And how in art, somebody who is mad during the Renaissance is often favored as somebody they use for vision in the painting of the apocalypse or the otherworldly, whether, you know, it's angels or demons. And they believe they really have the gift. They really can see. And they paint these depictions of these visions, sometimes, oftentimes, from somebody that is called mad. However, the flip side, a lot of the time, is the Ship of Fools, which is was a popular phenomenon around the same time, where they would separate the mad from society by people that were both mentally and physically ill with a cancer or a leprosy, and they're rotting, and they're having hallucinations, and they're not operating on the same level as everybody else. They take them and they put them on a ship altogether, and they say you're banished from society, and they'd all go out there into the, and this was how they them before mental health practitioners, before certain government institutions. They just said sending you out to sea, and that's where the term Ship of Fools comes from. And then a little bit later, in the mid-17th century, they started thinking that madness had more to do with what kind of jobs, like if you aren't doing the traditional role in society, like if you're taking on the role of a sex criminal, like a prostitute or a pimp, or if you're taking on the role of, let's say, a violent vagrant, right? Who, like, maybe beats people up and steals their money, this sort of thing. Or if you're taking on the role of somebody that curses the church or the temple or the government, they think these people are the ones now. So it's sort of like it moves away from the apocalyptic conspiracy sayers of the Renaissance into something else, where it's more about what kind of job they're doing now. And they don't think these are okay. So then they lock these people up and sometimes abuse them. And they say, you know, we don't make you matter. And they try and recreate them into something else, sometimes through not nice means. And, you know, they put them in institutions that are not like the mental health hospitals you see sometimes today, or even a few hundred years ago, more like a not nice prison, right? And so that's how they separate them. And some of them die in there. And some of them might get rehabilitated, depending on what the person that's, you know, running the situation conceives as what that means, if they choose somebody to let go or not. And then it comes to the 18th century, late 18th century, and he talks about the hospitals and how now man is separated if he's having problems, like he can't get by, or there's something like he feels like is wrong with reality, or he can't sustain because something's wrong with reality. And that becomes what's mental illness. And there could be lots of different reasons why, right? And so they separate them, and they put them in the hospitals. And they give them, they ignore them a lot of the time, and they have a lot of time where they just have a bed and they're ignored, like a mattress, and they sit on their bed. And they also get a long medical diagnostic, like a monologue, you know, somebody telling them what they think is wrong with them, for them to reflect and do some talk therapies with this and take some medicinals. And some are cured and some aren't. Now today, there are all kinds of people in a first world nation like the United States of America. There are people who, there are people who are drug addicts, who are rich, and they, let's say they're addicted to pain pills. They can even be a nurse in the United States of America because privacy is the law, right? But if they're not able to sustain, they might be a homeless person. They might get stolen from their drug addiction. They might be on the street. We discussed this on the Drug Wars. What is the problem exactly? It might not exactly be addiction. It might be something beyond that that has to do with different energy and biograds and different sets of circumstances, depending on if somebody still has money, is still kept in a house. And so it goes back to, again, with the hospitals. Does somebody think they have a problem or not? And if they don't, they could be a nurse that takes pain pills all the time, even though they're not supposed to. There's even a TV show like this called Nurse Jackie, I think from a couple of years ago. And she's addicted to pain pills, and she's a really top nurse in a top hospital, and she can't do it without them. But if she didn't have that, she could be a homeless person who has an addiction. But because she has that, she's not. And she'd be negated, possibly, if she didn't have that, right? So they have both in America. And it's just if, again, the idea from the latter type, if they think everything is okay, if they think they can sustain, if they show and demonstrate they've always worked jobs, they always can sustain, or they always have been given a house, then they might not care. They might not even care if you have a diagnostic. Tons of people have all kinds of diagnostics in the United States of America, from depression to anxiety, and there are all kinds of pharmaceuticals prescribed to them, to schizophrenia, to various different psychotic disorders. And a lot of them, as long as they're not violent and they don't bother people, they can even be interesting. If somebody gives them a house to sit in, they could be one of the best artists in the United States of America and be allowed to stay in there. If they have nowhere to go, maybe they're even more talented. And again, they're a homeless person on the street, and then what? It ends up, they either end up in a prison, they end up always homeless and wandering, or they end up in a mental institution. It's one of the three generally, right? And that's the difference. So it's from this latter type, sort of, that you can see in America today, the differentiation between why one has it and why one doesn't, but it's still not answering the question exactly as to why one has it and why one doesn't. Because then it's just circumstances, right? Because one person can be a massive, let's say, cocaine addict and still be rich. And still even be a professor of an interesting subject matter. Another person of the same background might have been arrested and put into prison, and then had their whole reality ruined, right? They'd have other situations like this, where, let's say, they slept with the wrong person. In one reality, they could write a book about that, and it becomes a bestseller they make into a movie. In another reality, if somebody educated on the same level, that person might do something really awful to them. They might even steal a lot of their stuff or something like that. So it's whether or not the person can get by and sustain is really, still to this day, a lot of, if you see somebody in something like a mental institution, or if you see somebody in a federal prison, right? And a lot of people commit low-level crimes all the time, whether they ran the light or they didn't run the light. Some people get in trouble for it, and some people don't. This still holds true to today. So, what is it? What is the reason? Well, it comes down to, is there something more? It comes down to, with different energy and biogrids, is it just us interacting with ourselves, or is there something else? Is there higher reasons for why some people sustain longer than others? And if it's not explaining this to you, that's okay. Lots of people go through life where they'll never know what anything is, and they just think, well, I'm alive and I have to keep sustaining, right? And it's okay if it's not explained, and it just looks like it's inconsistent, because then it's just some people live long, some people live short, is this argument, and some people live rich and some people live poor, and it doesn't have to do with being good or bad or breaking the law. That's not what it is. For the most part, it's not what it is. And these inconsistencies can contribute to why there are mental health problems, because there's a lot of problems with the justice system then, and people are promised to certain kinds of realities, and they see what other people are doing in those realities, and people tend to try and, you know, fit in and do things that other people are doing too, whether it's you're supposed to or not supposed to, especially as young people. You know, some people when they were in high school might have drinking underage or something like that, right? And some people might get in trouble for this. They might go to prison, whereas other people, they might grow up to be really advanced socially and marry a really interesting person and live a long life. And they'd have both. They'll always have both. So again, it's just the circumstances. Everybody is a different individual. And that is America. Unless they have people spying on us at all times in every single situation that we're ever in, so every person has to have numerous people spying on them at all times, they can't always be accountable to every person, and everybody's an individual with a different situation. Okay? So, today, as far as the apocalypse goes, sometimes, you know, there's tons of people that can write books on the subject matter of the apocalypse, believe there are higher beings, lower beings. They can talk in art like they used to back in the Renaissance. I don't see as gifted off art. If you go to like a major world art museum like the Metropolitan Museum of Art, that time period with angels and demons is exceptional. And you don't see it as much today. Some people might argue that it's something to do with the stars and what star phase we're in. Some people might argue it's something to do with technology, or both, or what chemicals we're consuming, or what rules are in place. Right? But they still have people writing books on the apocalypse, on otherworldly beings, all kinds of conspiracies. Some people think 9/11 was a conspiracy from a decade and a half ago, and maybe a separation of realities. They also thought that with Watergate. And it repeats sometimes, and it depends on if you pay attention to it or not, or if it affects your life or not. And there'll be tons of famous writers that get to lecture on this, and people love them, and they get to go see them talk about it. But there might be somebody who has a really interesting life story that had some kind of direct contact with a major world conspiracy like Watergate or 9/11, perhaps. Somebody could block them, and this is real, and they're not getting to tell their story. And what is that? What is that communicating? Okay. And so they would take them and they would separate them while they're diseased or physically and rotting a cancer, a leprosy, and of the mind in the earlier phases of his descriptions of madness and civilization. And we do this today, you know, and somebody, a lot of the time, if somebody is dying of a cancer, they put them in the hospital. Right? And their body's mutating into black cells instead of like white or pink cells, right? Parts of the body that are mutating into more of a rotting cell. And what does it mean? Ibsen, he's a famous playwright from about 100 years ago, wrote a play called, he's from the UK, I believe. He wrote a play called Ghost, about a man who has syphilis. And I saw it produced at the Shakespeare Theater Company in Washington, D.C. I used to work there. I used to help manage their subscription campaign. They have a very large one, and it won the Tony Award, their company, a few years ago. And the play is about a man who contracts syphilis, and he goes blind, and he lives with his mother. And it's, I think what they're trying to say is he's an outcast. So he's like a ghost of civilization that dies. He's rich. He doesn't have to go to the hospital, so they get to sit in a nice house together while he dies. But it makes him a ghost to the society. But I also think they're saying the disease is a ghost. It's like it's an entity from another reality taking over the body. The rot is taking over the body. It's a being from another reality. It's even intelligent. People would argue disease is intelligent. Some people might. I think I argued on an earlier episode that it's possible that something like cancer could be an entity from another reality going in us. And it's possible mutating us, which is a mirror to, if you see the Masons Temple in D.C. on my picture, to why they put mutants in front of the temple. Because they're saying some people can put their heads into otherworldly beings one way and others mutate into them, possibly, through disease, which is an intelligence. So it's a separation of realities, and it's saying the realities are, they want to separate different kinds of people so some can sustain in civilization, because like we said, in civilization and its discontent, it only can sustain if you have the pleasure principle, where you still desire for all kinds of things, to have a nice house, to have a nice lover, to have a nice job. If you can't have these things, then it's death and thanatos, and it's the destruction of civilization. So the mind has to be healthy and the body has to be healthy to keep up civilization. So if they separate it, there might, it's not impossible with different energy and biogrids that after people die, that they might not die because who knows what it is, and they might be put into another energy grid, and there might be other intelligences of higher and lower and mutant beings, of hells and heavens. And it might be real. What the church was communicating and what these mad people of the Renaissance were communicating in art, it really might be real. It really might mean they're in different bio and energy grids. It really might mean that the disease that we're still in by and die of, that might select something for us in an afterlife. Right? Or the genetics of somebody, people that we're close to and spend time with, breathing next to them or sleeping with them or eating with them might have something to do with it too. And to keep people in a certain civilization, they need to have a certain level of healthy body and mind. And again, this mirrors World War II. They're stealing the Jews and they're making them sick to kill off a race. Right? But they're doing it to them. And it's implying there's a separation of realities. And that's something that's very, you know, people will argue to take innocent people from their homes that never murdered anybody, that never, these are people that worked honest jobs. They weren't, you know, vagrants or prostitutes. They worked honest jobs where they just were given a home. So it's the opposite of what we're saying, and they were stealing them. So somebody is doing some kind of mass experiment and exterminating a race in World War II. That's the opposite of what they're saying about this. And he doesn't get into, he's European and he doesn't get into this too much in the book. This was written in the 60s, like 2 decades after the war. Okay. But they're implying there's separations of realities with bio and energy grids. And maybe there's a reason why something's upset, something's killing off a race, something's sadistic. There might be other realities of people being diseased that are innocent, too. There are other realities of people that practice in darker forms of magic that are sort of sadistic. And that's sort of being mirrored into World War II, right? So that's something else, too. Because it does exist, and they can affect modern day, even if they're invisible. That could be part of what mental illness is. Or one time. Beyond just chemical imbalance. And just giving that descriptive. But we want these people to stay in there. So we give them simple descriptives, right? We give them a chemical imbalance descriptive, a certain disease on a screen descriptive, and tell them to certain diagnostics in the DSM so they understand certain breakdowns of different mental health diagnostics, and they could take the pill if they're in there. And they can sustain if they're in there, right? However, are they in there? Is part of the question. Okay? So somebody that is diagnosed with a psychotic disorder, and there are many of them, are they necessarily in that variation of the head? Are they possibly a few heads back in another one? And they can't hear it correctly, or they can't see it correctly, or they're really in another one? Because again, if the multiverse is real, according to leading psychical researchers at the top academic institutions, it's possible that part of mental health is they're not actually in that one, and they're in another one, and who knows who's in that one, because it's just the way they look. And if they're not making that much rational sense in that reality, how do you know? If they forgot their identity, let's say, and they're freaking out all the time, would you know if it's still your sister or not? Just because it looks like her is why you think it's still her. That's possible. But that's part of it too. And there will only be advancements beyond our understanding if they become more advanced in what the human head is and what human head matrices are and in identity. And if there are, and it's been proven there are other energy and biomatrixes, where the head really is. Right? Because that might be really what dementia is. That might be really what a psychotic disorder is. And sometimes they're in there, and sometimes it helps them. But I think sometimes not. And so we still also see today the second type that he talks about with criminals. Being separated from society and sometimes being put in prisons, but a lot aren't. So it contributes a lot to mental illness. And some people, you know, are nonviolent and could be in there for any numerous reasons, and just staying in there, being blocked out of society, can make them sicker in their mind. If they have to sit in a cage for a year, right? And they then commit a violent act. And there's tons of minor crime somebody could commit that somebody else committed, or tons of people committed, even a politician committed, and they don't have to go to the jail. Okay? So there needs to be something different, I think, moving forward. These three types are real throughout history. I think he's right about them. But there needs to be something more advanced than reflecting on hundreds of years ago and the different types, or what was wrong in World War II, or, okay, we've had prisons for hundreds of years, what is wrong with the prison, what is wrong with the mental institution, what happens if they're really not in there, what happens if that's what's wrong, what happens if that's part of what's wrong, sometimes they're not in there, and so there needs to be advancements in them, otherwise, there'll always be injustices, and that's why. Otherwise, there'll always be inconsistencies, and that's why. And otherwise, there'll always be wars, and that's why. And that's on mental health, I think, ultimately. It's about an inconsistency with the reality perceiver and injustice. And being able to tune in to feeling okay, being able to tune into having an environment to learn and grow in, not being blocked. Okay, So I really recommend tuning into, if you get a chance, tuning into his work. I haven't read it in a few years, but it's a classic that was recommended in a gifted program. And he's a famous metaphysician. He's French. And so check it out. Madness and Civilization by Michel Foucault. Okay, thanks y'all for tuning in, and have yourselves a great evening.